Neil Slade. Somehow we turned into a 9/11 show, but that's what I like doing on this show. There's a stream of consciousness I like to follow and just follow where it goes. And well, I'm glad that we're going down the rabbit hole together here. Welcome back, Neil.
Thanks. Well, you know, it all has to do with brain, though. What I'm talking about, what I'm talking about is what is the psychology of the entire 9/11 thing, okay? Now, look at what does 9/11 mean to most people? When you say 9/11, what is their first reaction? What is their first emotional process that happens? Is it positive or negative?
Well, no, it's amazingly with the withdrawal, like I just took a...
It's painful, yeah. Right? What's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of 9? People dying, people jumping out of buildings, fire, war. So 9/11 for most people equals pain. And I'm not dismissing that at all. It was a terrible disaster. But I can confidently say to you that once I began examining what 9/11 was about, this has been one of the most positive, life-changing experiences that I've ever had. It's been one of the most enlightening experiences. It's been one of the most liberating experiences. And I'll tell you why that is. The more I study and understand about what 9/11 symbolizes and what it means, the more I realize a lot of things that are used to generate fear in that are meant to generate fear in me and in the general population, it's a fraud. The war on terror is a tool of fear, but it's fraudulent. The war on terror is a self-fulfilling prophecy. It's a waste of money. Think about this, okay? How many people in the United States have died because of terrorism? And we'll just say in the United States. Probably, if you add up that number of people and compare it with the number of people who die of drunk drivers in 1 month, of the number of people who die from obesity, of the number of people who die from lung cancer, it's a no contest. It's no contest. More people die in automobile accidents every month than die in years from terrorism. The war on terrorism is something that was constructed by people to serve their agenda. Look at who is benefiting from the war on terror. Who is making money from the war on terror? And compare that with who is being hurt here? We had an event in which many people died, but it's been used to justify all kinds of things. Of billions, we spend $3 billion a week in Iraq. A week. $3 billion. It's between $2 and $3 billion a week. Okay, so stopping right there, 9/11 equals pain. Right? And people instinctively want to avoid pain, right?
They seem to recoil even before it even comes out. That I mean, you know, the event itself is painful, period, the fact that it happened.
Absolutely.
But seems to me there's another level that's avoided so quickly.
Yes. Well, it has to do, first of all, it has to do with the images that we associate with 9/11. So the image, when you say 9/11, you have an image of fireball in buildings and buildings collapse. We've been given this image. And what people who are trying to help others understand what 9/11 is all about, first of all, they have to replace that imagery and tell people that by understanding 9/11, they will be liberated, that they will regain power, that they will not have their money wasted any longer, okay? That's the first thing. You've got to replace that. And to that I say, you know, I've been liberated by learning more and more and more about this subject. The other thing that comes to play is that we are taught at a very young age to be comforted by Big Daddy. When you go to school, are you taught to think creatively? Are you taught to think analytically? Are you taught to think intuitively? No. What we learn in our education system is that the teacher knows what's best and that we should learn all of these facts. It's very rare that we come across a teacher who tells us to think to ourselves. From the time we are infants until the time we graduate from college, we are taught that we should listen to and obey Big Daddy because Big Daddy will protect us and make us safe. Okay? So we have learned to survive. We associate survival with obedience to authority figures and Big Daddy. So in our society, who are our authority figures? Well, it's the president, the vice president, it's leaders of Congress, it's the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal, and it's Tom Brokaw, and it's Dan Rather, and all these peoples whose images we see wherever we go. If we walk to the corner grocery store, we see Big Daddy on the cover of the magazine and on the cover of the newspaper. And if we go into the bar and we turn on the TV, we see an authority figure, Big Daddy. These kinds of images are everywhere. So if we connect survival and comfort, as we've been taught since we were infants, if we connect that with obedience to the authority figure, which most of us do, if the authority figure tells us that 19 hijackers on this day flew their planes into these buildings and the buildings came down, and this was all the plans of this bearded guy in the cave in Afghanistan. If that's what Big Daddy is telling us, we want to believe that because that's what we've come to. That's how we've been trained our whole lives.
It's a training, one of the people who objected to what I was talking about is that they want to not know. They don't. So one person said that.
Of course, they shouldn't tell us.
It's a voluntary thing. I mean,
listen. What if when a child has been abused by their parent, do they want to admit it? Of course not. Daddy abused me? I can't accept that. To accept the notion that you have been abused by your parental figure is one of the most traumatic and difficult things that any person can face. And so when people are told that their president or their vice president or Dan Rather is wrong, my God, how is that possible? I trust Dan Rather. I trust the president. They can't lie to me because if you are faced with that reality, then the whole matrix becomes exposed that you were talking about. Okay? It means the whole universe that you thought was so real suddenly falls away from your feet. And you start to question, oh my God, what's real? So to question that you have been lied to and abused by people in positions of power, whether they be your teacher at school, whether they be where you're getting your news, whether they be your representatives in the government, that's a really, really difficult thing for people to deal with. And some people say, I can't deal with that. No, I don't accept that because it's too painful. And what it requires is that you have a sense of self that is rock solid and is not dependent upon the authority figure. And many people don't have that. the people who you present the matter-of-fact information, in this case about 9/11, to and say, okay, well, I'll be open to that. These people have a strong sense of self. They realize that they have a strong faith. They may have a very strong faith in God because they realize that anything goes, and that, you know, truth is not dependent upon one. Truth is truth. Truth isn't what necessarily comes out of this person's mouth or what comes out of this person's mouth or what comes out of the authority figure. They have a solid, fundamental, psychological sense of who they are. And so they are not threatened by the fact that Big Daddy may have lied to them or may have given them wrong information. Okay?
But I'm thinking that that those times are the people are going to make the choice. They're either going to open their eyes up or something else will happen in their life to keep opening their eyes up. And do you think that there is some force, call it God, call it a spirit, call it whatever, working behind the scenes to bring us more toward the higher brain, and thus this 9/11 is a great tripwire?
Yeah. Well, I think what has to happen is people have to have the understanding. You know, did you ever see Debbie Downer on Saturday Night Live?
No.
Okay, Debbie Downer is a character, and people go out to dinner with you know, they go out to have a good time, for example, and they're sitting in the restaurant, and Debbie Downer is the kind of person who just sees the negative side of everything, right? You know, they're saying, you know, if someone has something good to say, she's the one who always finds the negative side of things. That's why she's called Debbie Downer. And it's a pretty funny skit, right?
Mm.
And what people have to do, people will not be attracted to the truth of 9/11 or the truth of anything unless they can see past it and see the positive side to learning who's behind the matrix, as it were, for as an analogy, right? You know, we have to get past the point where we see that that there is a positive side to examining the truth, even when it's painful. That even though it may be painful to remove a splinter out of our finger, that beats getting an infection in our finger because we're too chicken to pull the splinter out. Do you follow what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying. You know, for me, as I've examined 9/11, which on the surface and at a certain level is a very negative, very painful experience, it's a tremendously liberating, a tremendously energizing task for myself, and that I see anyone else who starts to examine this, you know, resistance leads to persistence. I think there's a saying.
Well, if there isn't, there should be.
Yeah, resistance leads to persistence. If you resist something, it'll just persist, okay? You have to get through it. And so anything that you might learn about 9/11 per se can be applied to really anything in our experience and in our search as examine our own brain and our own behavior. Now, at the Brain Lab, for example, one of the key tools that we used for people who suffer traumatic experience in their life. Now, what the amygdala, for example, is that click switch in your brain that allows you to click backwards or forwards. It remembers things that caused you pain in your life. So, for example, if you're an infant and you put when you're a little toddler and you see, oh, there's a pretty blue flower on top of my stove. So you go in and you reach for the blue flower and you burn your hand, right? Your amygdala changes that into a memory circuit in your brain so that the next time you see a pretty blue flower on the stove, you immediately pull back your hand. You don't burn yourself anymore, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very smart way. Nature's smart. Yeah, I mean, that's a good idea for your amygdala to do that. It registers a painful memory so that your reaction to similar situations is instantaneous. Okay? All right. So, what's true of the blue flap burning your hand on the stove is true of all the traumatic events in your life, and you remember those, and you pull back from those. And what we learned in the brain lab is that very often our life is changed from very early traumatic events that reprogrammed in our brain. And they may not be changed in a positive way. So you can go back by facing these traumas and you can relive them and then you can reprogram them into a positive experience. And that way you won't feel pain whenever you see a blue flower on the stove. You'll cook your oatmeal on it because you understand it. You'll make popcorn on it because you understand it. You don't automatically pull back because you've faced what the pain was and you've learned to control it as opposed to being controlled and ruled by the trauma.
No, I totally agree, and there's a big amen, and I've said it before, that you have to let it happen. You know, when you explore it, well, we're going to go to break here, but you explore it like one more time and then let it go in and put something else in for it, so to speak. But hold on, we'll come back and continue. And we're talking with Neil Slade. We're all over the place, but it's all about the brain and how we use it and how it grows. We're back talking with Neil Slade. You got about 10 minutes, Neil, to spend as you wish.
Sure.
And hopefully...
Well, you know what I thought of was, you know, I mean, the name of your show is Feet to Fire. What's the origin of that?
No, yeah, it's checking out the facts.
Checking out what may be hot, what may initially be, you know, it's the flames of truth, you know?
I did a thing when I was younger where when people would say things, I would be able to take what they say and... if I was in a recreational mood, as I was when I was younger, I would shove it back down their throat. But as I grew up and got more mature, if I could say that term, is that I would say, here's what you say, and I would say, now, I want to see that. You know, there's this, okay, you could say something, but then let's actually see it in action. And that is, you know, that's kind of where that came from. And if somebody teaches something, then there should be proof of it.
It sounds like the application of critical, logical thinking, you know?
And that's too big for a name of a show, though.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, listen, the real key to brain power and to making your life work, according to Neil Slade, is to balance your brain, is to use both the linear, logical, verbal left hemisphere, which is, you know, 1 plus 1 equals 2, 2 plus 2 equals 4, if you drop a penny, it will fall to the ground unless you're out in outer space where there's no ground. See, that's a left brain. And so you've got to have a good amount of left brain going, okay? But you also have to balance that so that you have your whole brain going. You've got to use that right brain, which is intuition. It's gut feeling. It's that enteric brain, see? Your logical head brain, which deals with facts and things, is balanced by this brain that's in your gut as well, you know? So, you know, it's very, people tend to be dominant either where they do everything by facts and figures and they're totally skeptical and I've got to know this, or they tend to be dominant right brain where they're not interested in the facts and they're just all doing it by intuition. But the smartest person has equal use of both that right brain and both that left brain. You know, Einstein, when he couldn't figure out something, he'd go in and he'd start playing the violin. He'd play some music. When Edison couldn't solve a problem, he said, well, I'm going to go take a cat nap and go to sleep. And then he'd wake up and he'd say, ah, I thought of it while I was sleeping. You know? Here's a good example. There's a technique called super learning. And this was developed by people who were trying to learn a foreign language. I mean, how more left brain can you get than trying to learn to speak a language in a you know, that you didn't grow up with. They found that the quickest way to absorb and learn and utilize a new language is to play Baroque music at 50 beats per minute and have that playing in the background while you're trying to learn your new language, of all things. And they found what it did is it balanced the brain. It gave rhythm to the learning process. It kept the right brain happy while the left brain was busy doing all this verbal language work.
Well, that's pretty interesting because I used to, at times when I've had trouble sleeping, in fact, I thought about it again, because I've been sleeping very shallow, was I used to play, I'd fill up my CD player, I got a 10 CD one, and I would play Baroque all night.
Oh, sure. T.D. Lingo, who ran the Brain Lab for 35 years, sometimes I would go up there at night and I'd walk by his house, his cabin where he was living, and I'd put my ear to the door, and I'd hear Beethoven coming out of his little transistor radio in the middle of the night. So, yeah, absolutely. We have to balance our brain. We have to balance what we know to be as fact with serious skepticism. You know, I often say if one thing is true, then the very opposite must also be true. And I think that's a very healthy attitude to have. So that's kind of my modus operandi, as it were.
Well, I operate looking for truth because at one point in my past, I think I was afraid of the truth because the truth would point to me being bad, wrong, dumb, or I don't know, all these negatives. And when I actually went and found the truth, well, of course I found things to work on, but I also found good strength.
Yeah.
Smart. And, you know, if you really seek the truth, it does set you free. It's not going to be roses, but it's not going to be all thorns either. It's really good. And when you actually apply truth, it ends up being all good in the long run.
Yeah. How can information harm you? You know, as long as you know the information to, you know, when you're learning a subject, and it doesn't matter whether it's piano or saxophone or physics or history, it's important to have multiple sources of information. And I think you get into trouble when you have limited sources of information and limited techniques. And the smart person and the person who is good at their job, they will draw from what they will draw from east, they'll draw from north, from south, and from west, like a spider web, and they'll be in the center, and you'll get your information. So if one of the lines of information proves to be faulty, you've got all these other supporting lines to keep you afloat and to keep you going. And so, you know.
Amen. Amen. That's what we try to do here is have all kinds of point. Now, we're going to go, but really quick, give us your addresses again.
Go to brainradar.com, and if you want to read about the 9/11, just go to 911think.com. And if you go to my main website at Brain Radar, we've got online books, and we've got 5 books on brain and behavior self-control. We've got 20 brain music and audiobook CDs, and we've got the Amazing Brain Adventure DVD, and you can get them online, and you can get them physical, and however which way is you'd like to have them. And they're cheap, too. They're inexpensive.
And it's done good stuff, good price.